Strategic Hot Box with Dr. Brandi Love Stankovic. Discussing leadership, business, and how to take control of your life and achieve greatness. From the streets of Las Vegas, energized, informed, and never diluted, it's time to kick some ass.
Welcome back to the Strategic Hot Box. It's your girl, Dr. Brandi Stankovic. I am so excited to be here. We have a very special guest with us today that's going to help us dig into how to make history relevant and what we can learn about the past, how we can bring it into the future, how we can dig in and get delicious and get dirty, maybe a little, get all dirty with it, and learn about those that have come before, respect it, learn from it, and build on it. So let's get started. As you know, the Strategic Hot Box is built into three sections. I feel like it's become part of our mantra, our philosophy. It's the learn, the love, and the kick ass. In the learn section, we give us some new tools. We talk to you. We speak, you know, give you anything that you need to take from here and make something happen and dig into some different topics. And today, that's going to be a little bit about history and legacy and how we can learn from those that came before us. And then the love section, we'll talk about relationships and the importance of history to relationships. We'll get to know Dale and some of the journeys that he has been on all over the world. And then in the kick-ass, of course, my favorite part, your favorite part, I'm going to give you some kick-ass things that you can start making happen today. So when it comes to history, we've talked about legacy on this podcast. We've talked about respecting those that have come before us. And I even have a quote that I want to share with you today. And that is, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And George Santayana, I should probably have looked up how to exactly say that quote before I like look up so many different things. But regardless, it's a very important quote. And I think that it really speaks to the fact that those who cannot remember or even understand, build, and absorb the past are going to repeat the mistakes that we've made in the past or are going to look silly into the future. Right? Because you are not building on what came before. And one of the things that Dale's father and you shared in the show, and we'll learn from Dale here in a few minutes, but if you really want to know someone, you have to know where they came from, right? And he shared that, and we'll learn more about that. But it's so true. If you don't understand where people are from, where organizations are from, the history of projects, then you really don't know those projects or those organizations. I have a good friend, John Allen. So shout out to John from San Diego Firemen's Relief Association. And he has this process called the 30 seconds of feedback, where anytime he comes into an organization, or he comes into a meeting, comes into a problem, one of his employees comes to him and says, I have a problem. He says, give me 30 seconds of context. I want to know the background of what's happening before you build me into what's happening here or where you want me to make a decision in the future. And that's powerful. Give me some update of what's so I can get a bigger picture, a strategic view of what's happening. And I really think that in from a strategic planning sense, from, you know, knowing a foundation, from building goals, you have to know the why behind decisions that were made in the past, even if they were bad decisions. Most of the time, leaders, most of the time, human beings don't sit around going, well, how can we screw up today? I mean, sometimes we do on like a good Friday night, right? After a couple shots, I sometimes will look to cause trouble. But most of the time, organizations go into it with some sort of intent. They intended on doing things the right way. Now, it may have been based on bad knowledge. It may have been based on emotion. You know, there could have been things that came into play. But it's important to know what those things were in order to be able to correctly make an informed decision going forward. The history of the players, the relationships, any shared experiences that happen. And the first thing that anybody does in crisis management, if you think about it, or planning or goal setting or anything really is a situation. Analysis. So where we are right now, how do we get here, and what do we need to know? Right? So there, and I think the final thought on this before we transition and talk to Dale is the fact that there's rarely original thought. There's rarely a new thought. So people will come up and say, I've got this brand new idea. And most of the time, people that think they're always right or think that they have brand new ideas are people that aren't looking for ideas elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And we have information at our fingertips so much. And I can't wait to dig into Dale's experience when it comes to education. But I know, and I've shared with you on the podcast before, my entire doctoral process was about teaching me how not smart I am. and about teaching me that there's so much more information out there that I need to be constantly seeking and going after. And that's what life is all about, is the fact that there is knowledge based on knowledge, built on knowledge for years and years and years and years. And it's amazing to think about that and to absorb into it, to look into it, and then build an informed decision going forward. And we have so many opportunities to learn about the nuances of people, culture, and the romance of what came before. And I think there's no one better to help us in this journey than Dale Simpson Jr. You have your bachelor's in anthropology and geography. You've got a master's in anthropology and archaeology. You're in the process and almost there with your doctorate, maybe almost have it, in archaeology. And you've gotten those from Canada and from Australia and from all over the world. You were the host on Found on the History Channel. Very cool show for anybody that hasn't, you know, seen that episode. And you worked on your PhD on Easter Island, I mean, which is so amazing. Analyzed tools to make the Moai and the famous Easter Island statues. Give it a Google if you don't know what that is. And you're an instructor of the College of DuPage and the Malcolm X College. And you speak three languages. Say something. Say hello to us in your three languages.
I'll say good day. Hola, ¿cómo estamos? Yirana Korua, Pejera.
I thought maybe in English you'd say, yo.
Yo, what up? Does that work? Yo.
That's the formal, sure. You know, English language.
Is that the Vegas chatter? You just say, yo, what up?
Yo. Okay, so enough. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm glad we finally got to get together face to face and have a chat over this system here. But, you know, before we go, I just want to do one thing that you brought up about respect. Something I learned in Australia. What you do is, before you start any meeting or sort of discussion, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, both past and present, especially the Southern Paute, which are from this area. Mm-hmm. But just keep in mind that, you know, we're in Native American Awareness Month, and it's really important to see these first ancestors that were here, you know, 10,000, 15,000 years ago, up to the groups that are living till today. So we want to go back in long-term history. These are the groups that I'd like to acknowledge today.
Excellent. I was hoping that it wasn't going to include some sort of, like, ritual.
Well, we can do that later. Let's get those three shots.
Off-camera ritual is going to.
That's right. No rituals. Just enough to, I always like to give respect first. And I think that those are the groups that come before us. And that's why we're here today.
I love that. And I'm so intrigued by all the journeys that you've had. Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Oh, my journeys. Okay. Well, I think some of it is one of the highlights I always start with in my life is, the more you see other cultures, the better you understand your own. It's so simple. It's a very simple thing. You know, when you go to another place and see why someone eats this instead of that. Mm-hmm. Simple things. Now, whether we're in Vegas, we see tons of cultures and languages, and we sit down and it's just great to people watch.
Yeah.
But when you come down to the bare tacks of it, we all need to eat. We're all looking to have a good time. We want some good music. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to experience things that we've never done before. It's very human in all of us. So I love coming to new places and just, you know, asking those questions you said, the who, what, why, where, when, how. Mm-hmm. That's what I go by. The who, what, why, when, how. Do you do that enough about that culture you're participating in? So the journeys are based in that. And then my father, as a police officer, just really always practiced sort of, you know, cultural relativity. Really understand about that culture before you make an interpretation.
Or judgment, sure.
And that was the greatest thing from my father. My mom is a genealogist, where she studies the ground and the paper trail. I study the dirt trail. Wow. So she really slowly gave me sort of a background of, how do you look at the past? What are you looking for? Mm-hmm. So we're both looking at some things and people and events and artifacts from the past, but we use different records.
Sure.
But our goal is the same.
It is.
So between my parents and then Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, I mean, that was, I think that I would love to see a resurgence in the Scouts in the United States. I think it was something, you know, till today, a Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverend. You know,
where that is living inside your brain.
I don't know. I don't ask me to do that again.
Do you have your badge, like your sash on under that sweatshirt?
I should. I got my pocket blade. That's all I carry. So I'm all right there in a flashlight. But, you know, literally, I live by those things today. Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverend. Maybe that's not great. Not the reverend place as much.
Vegas.
This is Sin City, so stays in Vegas, that type of stuff. So trips are around, you know, that idea of finding new culture, new places, the influence of my parents, Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, and then lastly, my education. Mm-hmm. And then I luckily had a wrestling scholarship to go to Canada, and that was really awesome because I was living in another country. I was seeing how these individuals make their society. What's the difference of having 330 million versus 33 million?
Sure.
Looking at demography, understanding those little subtle differences and how that influences economy and politics.
Did you
and
just
so
say
far.
Demography?
Yes.
Tell me what that term is.
So just studying population numbers, mm-hmm. how much mm-hmm. people live in an area make a big difference. Mm-hmm. So I want to know how many people are here in Vegas. Someone's a little more than a million. You know, in Chicago, we got a little more than 3 million. Mm-hmm. New York, the largest. And then world cities, too. I like just, they're great trivia questions. We do trivia nights.
Yes.
There's always up
I'm
there
sure
geography
you're a
questions.
Clutch person on a trivia night.
In some categories, yes. In others, I'd rather run.
That's
because I'm not that good at all. You know, I know my limits. I know my limits.
I'm the go-to drinker on the
I like
on
it.
The group.
I like it.
That, but it's an interesting thing that you bring up about that, because I remember my first time to China. I've always known the space differential just through studying of
sure.
cultural differences of the Asian popular culture and general populations. But when you go there and the amount of people that live in those countries and how close they have to be
right.
by nature of that,
sure.
that it just makes people. Sense.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. So.
That study of proximics, that's what mm-hmm. that's called, you know, studying the distance. And I mm-hmm. do that in one of my classes, is that I'm trying to discuss that different cultures have different
sure.
areas.
Comforts. Uh-huh.
So, you know, I just start getting really close to a student just right. to see how close you can get in without them. I'm like, that's her personal space. But
sure.
if I would have been doing anything out of that, I would have been fine. So sometimes that's a cultural thing. You're with,
absolutely.
You're with, you know, my family, my other family lives in Chile mm-hmm. and they give kisses when you meet someone for the first time and you're mm-hmm. hugging and so forth. So like you gotta be comfortable with other people's comfort zones.
Absolutely. And respect it. Cause I mean, live like when in Rome kind of thing.
That's right. I like it.
So why are you passionate then about preserving and uncovering and discovering?
Man, that's a great question. I mean, that's at the heart of any archaeologist. Usually it's something like, oh, Indiana Jones, or, you know, that goes down that rabbit hole. But he wasn't really a great archaeologist, you know.
He was hot.
He was definitely hot. I got no problem. I mean, that look is epic. It'll be epic until humans end. It'll mm-hmm. just that look. But, you know, I don't know that many archaeologists that go in a tomb and rip off a femur bone and make a torch out of it. That's not the best practice that you want out there at all.
Not.
It's not best practice. You're not going to get your research grant from that. That's for sure. So, but I think that he puts a little romance that you bring into. But really for me, the scouts, we did a lot of Native American powwows.
Mm-hmm.
We went on mammoth digs and all of a sudden some just really hit. But wrestling came in, was really important in my life. And then I luckily got the scholarship to head to Canada. But once I got there, I went for business and I got 2 C's in business and I got B's in anthropology. Mm-hmm. And I said, something's not, maybe I'm
clicking.
Not a business
mm-hmm.
guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started down this trail, you know, and then I lived in Canada for the 5 years and did that. And then met my ex-wife and we lived many years in Chile and then mm-hmm. on Easter Island and then Australia and then New Zealand. And now I'm back in the Shy just trying to finish this PhD.
That's cool.
But it's just the trips are just, it's about that life. And I'm passionate because I think I'm very fortunate.
Where is the craziest place you've ever been?
Oh, man.
And you can define crazy in
yeah,
any
I know.
Way you'd like.
I just think isolation is one thing when you're, I think New Zealand to me is mm-hmm. just a place that
it's
is,
beautiful.
It's so wild.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's unbelievable. And the Maori culture
it's
that-
so neat, right?
They're, you know, they had so many trees and resources and mm-hmm. their carvings are so much- so intricate. So when I work at the Field Museum, you know, in Chicago, we have this beautiful house. It's called Rua Te Papuketu.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this meeting house. It's the only one in the United States. And everything is carved. Every square inch is a carving.
Wow.
So you can just, you know, you take your shoes off before you go inside a house, a fare. That's so you don't respect, keep the diseases and dirt outside and you come into your fresh area. And there's carvings of all the ancestors on the wall. I want to go back to things like, what is your genealogy?
Sure.
In my classes, I always make them do kinship projects
mm-hmm.
in an anthropological way. I want them to know who their ancestors. When I ask the students, you know, who's your great-great-grandma? Can anyone name a name? And it's silent.
Wow.
So I want to go back to that type of, and I think when I go to other cultures, I can see what my family, my mom's a genealogy, you need to go here, you need to go to Italy.
Right.
So recently we just came back from a road trip in the Smoky Mountains and I found my 8th great-grandfather, John Owensby. It's his cabin.
Wow.
It's his cabin. So I never get to do my own archaeology.
Yeah,
right. I'm always
cool.
doing other people's archaeology. I'm
right.
always in, you know, on other islands, but this may be a chance that I can excavate my own ancestors.
That's cool.
So again, I don't care what culture it is. I'm just interested. That's my currency, where yours is, you know, sort of information and business and leadership. Mm-hmm. Mine's culture, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, I don't deal with gold or gas or water. I mm-hmm. deal with my thing as culture.
So I'm part of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Okay.
Have you heard of them?
Sure.
So grandma has... traced our lineage all the way back to the American Revolution. And so we know everybody all the way. And so it's always been part of our lives and knowing that history and that type of thing. So it's interesting to me to hear that people don't know
sure.
what's happening in their lives. What value do you think that brings to them?
Well, does it bring a value? They're missing out on that value. That's mm-hmm. exactly the point
mm-hmm.
where they're not having that family. You know, they have more friends than family. I'm not saying all family is good. There's, you know, not all family relates. They all get together. We don't live in that.
You could undercover some crazy things in that cabin.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm excited. I hope we get to get out there. But that's the whole thing about archaeology, about permits. And you have to do it right. The native people, the land, the Cherokee there, how do they feel about it? Because mm-hmm. those relationships were created back then as well. So there's a lot that goes into it. But I guess the ultimate thing about, for me, about the passion, just to end this question, I know mm-hmm. we're on this rant here. It's just like, it's just putting the unknown to the known.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. I learned that from the FBI on a forensic course we went on to. And he's always trying to put things in the context from the known to the unknown to the known. Sorry, known to the unknown. You work what the data you have and try to get to that information you don't have. And you use all of those points of information.
So what you have in your system and apply it to what you don't have.
Exactly.
To get more.
Nailed it. I think that's it. Because then you can use all those who, what, why, where, when facts that you have already gathered and start putting the story together. Then in science, what we use is another interpretive framework is theory. So in archaeology, there are multiple theories for thousands of years that people have been thinking about archaeology. Someone has created a theory to help frame out mm-hmm. what that discussion is about the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, in archaeology, we have a unique thing that we do theory and practice. And we do mm-hmm. a very, you know, it's a very important part of our work. So I try to use what I know, use the experience that I have from the techniques that I've been, you know, been learning for so many years. But it's always fun. Can you put those in a new context? Can you make two new studies? Can you think about how new technology could be used in archaeology? And that's where the trend centers are at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just gave a woman a million dollar grant because she was using things like Google Earth and finding archaeological sites digitally.
Oh, wow.
And I don't believe it was NASA. I forgot who signed the check. But that's an outstanding thing for even young archaeologists out there.
To get excited about.
Get on mm-hmm. Google and just scoop around. Find an area in your neighborhood. See what it is. You see mumps, a bump. You see a hill. Do you see a ravine? Do you mm-hmm. see any kind of work? And I think, again, going back to the geography part of it, that's always fun about archaeology. See where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's really neat.
Yeah, the where.
So what was an unexpected aha moment for you? What's something that's come about that...
So I'll just my little note here because I got this one I really want to highlight. You know what? It's finding out about the Polynesian motif.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to so many Polynesian islands.
Motif like their dress?
Yeah, just a general. Just like it's like a culture, but mm-hmm. like you can see it. It's a thread and it's in everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's how they make things. It's how they cook. It's how detail oriented they are about using everything possible. It's about
not wasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About being a jack of multiple trades. Don't just become one thing. You know, we have that question we ask our kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they have one thing.
Right.
Sort of already pigeonholes yourself uh-huh. that you can't actually elongate what you can be.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these younger kids. Oh, I want to be a surfer. I want to be a gardener. I want to be a tour guide. I want, because they have this idea. They want to be good in a lot of things.
Sure.
So I think, you know, with the island, it's just such a unique place, Easter Island, as we get into mm-hmm. it. I do so much work there. And I think an aha moment is when I then went the first time to another island in Polynesia, to Tahiti, and I realized they have similar drawings and dress mm-hmm. as two islands. Now,
wow.
there's a lot of connection between them.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably been in connection for 800 years.
Mm-hmm.
But in there, you see if the devil's in the details type stuff. If you really pay attention, there's a lot of similarity. However, they're from different islands. Therefore, they have their own trajectory. Mm-hmm. They're going to make their own pieces out of what they have.
Mm-hmm.
Tahiti, more trees, more biodiversity. So you see a different, but that motif is still there, that underlying motif.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to New Zealand, which was probably the last island colonized by human beings. And then you have Australia, which is probably the first island colonized.
Wow.
So 50,000 years versus 1,000 years.
Hmm.
And those are completely two groups through DNA, through culture, but they're only separated by a 3-hour flight.
Interesting.
So when you see, you can, you know, and that's why I have some of my mates, you know, they'll be like, oh, there's no difference between Australia and New Zealand. You're like, oh, wait a minute, slow down. It's like 50,000 years difference and completely two different cultural trajectories, mm-hmm. although they're from the Pacific.
Right.
So the Pacific is sort of macro and micro at the same time. You can, it depends where your microscope is at. Are you interested in the large macro mm-hmm. that you want to see everything? Or are you really dialing in to see that really focused detail? Mm-hmm. So you always got to be changing your microscope about life, about questions, about research.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something we always need to keep in mind. Change your microscope.
Yeah, change your microscope. I love that.
Change your
microscope. Can you share a funny story or a mistake, something crazy that's happened to you along the way?
Yeah. So I always bring this one up and everyone laughs. So the first time that I was on Easter Island, we were doing a lot of hiking out to one of the sites that we were excavating.
Mm-hmm.
We were mostly excavating ovens because inside ovens, when you burn any type of material,
remnants.
We can get the carbon, we can get carbon 14, anything that was alive. Mm-hmm. So burnt bone, twig, mm-hmm. so forth, a shell. So we can get the dating from there. But we have to walk quite far every single day and got the sieves on our back and your lunch and you're out there for long days and the wind's just full on. And we get ready for lunch. And the one of the groups that brought us out there, we all sit down and they, while we're excavating, they're fishing right off the sides. And they don't use a typical pole. They just use a little piece of PVC and they have line on it and they whip out the line and they just jig like this instead of having a pole. And they're masters at it. And you catch these little pan fish called PCs. They're beautiful. They're really good to eat. So the first time that we're all, and a lot of these people that I met in 2001, a lot of them are still my friends. So we always go back to this story all the time. So we're sitting down and we're getting, and they have their fish. And instead of having a fire where they just have like a grill, they warm up rocks and put the fish right on the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So actually you're rock cooking it. A little bit of lemon, a little bit of salt. Oh, beautiful. So they say, well, the first one, what we have to do, we have to take the fish off and we put it inside the fire. And that's for the tupuna. That's for the ancestors. So they can eat because they're hungry too. They've been helping us work. And they, you know, they're not the only ones working here. We got to feed them as well and fill their belly. But the second one goes to the invited guest. But you have to bite the head off. I went, well, I like sushi. I guess, I mean, this is, you know, whatever.
When in
I
Rome.
I went in Rome as we went back into, when in Rapa Nui. I guess one of these stories are when in Rapa Nui. And I'm looking around and everyone's looking at me and all these kids are sitting around the fireside. And sure enough, knowing me, because I go for it, just took a huge bite. And everyone starts dying laughing.
Because they weren't serious.
And I'm like, exactly. I'm like, do I have a piece of lemon on my face? And I'm like, what's wrong with my body? And they're like, we never eat the head like that. What are you doing? So I, you know, because I literally won't eat crow, but I'll eat fish. And I'm just struggling to get it down.
Crunching this head.
But
bones and all.
But from there, what I've learned is that you do eat everything on the head. You know, the eyeballs is very good. The little, there's like morsel parts on the back that you can just sort of eat. That's a really good part, a lot of protein there. But I did not know how to do it. I was so uncultured. I was a swine, uncultured swine. Yeah. But then from there, when I see some of these friends, they'll always just give me the elbow and be like, you want a fish? Just... Get that head off. Or I'll see joke people on the street trying to bite that head off. And, you know, but that made me realize I was dealing like humans, going back to the cultural universals that are out there. Laughter and comedy, as we know, is the one of the most greatest cultural universals we have out there. And it was just showing me that this is a group my age. I probably would have done the same thing to them. Mm-hmm. Maybe not made them eat a fish, maybe some a little nice, but you know, we would have had that type of camaraderie and some of those are my friends still today.
That's great.
So I always think about how I look like a total fish eating idiot.
And I'll remember that if we ever eat a meal together, that, you know, to just let it go, whatever's happening.
Yeah, just warn me, Dale, no heads. I will stay away.
So share a bold action item or a takeaway or something our listeners can walk away with.
Yeah, I was thinking about this a lot. I didn't want to say eight words when four will do. Mm-hmm. And I brought this word up a little bit earlier, and it's cultural relativity. It's a term we use in anthropology quite frequently. It came from a gentleman named Dr. Franz Boas, who was sort of the godfather of anthropology. He ended up starting the school project or the school at Columbia, which is one of the most prestigious anthropology departments. In short, he was from Chicago as well. He did some work there. But through his work, he came up with an idea that you want to see like another culture, you know, as they are, right? So difficult in the postmodern age that we don't see how things are how they are. We see things as we are.
Right.
But you have to really move your position all the time, asking those who, what, why, where, when questions. And what cultural relativity gives us is it helps us defeat ethnocentrism,
mm-hmm.
that our culture is better inherently because it's ours compared to yours.
Right.
I think that, you know, you really have to get into it. You have to eat, you have to breathe, you have to listen, you have to challenge the xenophobia. Mm-hmm. You really do. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you're so unaware of it. You're like, God, what is this? I can't understand. I don't want it. You have to go with it.
Sure.
Get past that culture shock. Understand that that culture has things to teach you. Mm-hmm. Every culture in this world has something else to teach something else. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my benefits, is sort of like a cultural broker. My job is really to be, you know, an outlet. And mm-hmm. I have all these different type of plugs that come my way, and I've got to change the energy to another culture. Mm-hmm. I can do that through language. I can do that through writing, research. But I guess my speaking point is, look up, as you just said, you know, cultural relativity, and embrace it as a concept. Mm-hmm. Really embrace it. And I think we'll get it's a cheap thing to do. Yeah. You don't need to put a lot of money into it. It's right. Just how you go out every day. I said, instead of what will Jesus do, those WW, you know, uh-huh. What would cultural relativity do? You know, and have a think about a situation like that.
And people don't have to necessarily travel to do that. Now, if they have the opportunity to travel, then please, I always urge people to do that. But if not, there's so many subcultures in the United States and whatever country that is listening and watching us and being a part, they can definitely go into their own backyard, dig up a little, and say, how can I get involved in those subcultures as well?
No, you nailed it. I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, in Chicago, we have over 100 languages there. Mm-hmm. You know, the gentleman who drove us here and lifted us over here, he was giving us a nice little tour.
Nice.
And he was going through just the amount of Chinese individuals that have been here.
Sure.
In different groups. So like, our American story is about migration. It's mm-hmm. about movement.
Yeah.
And especially during Native American Heritage Month, we've got to know we're just one more layer of this grand migration of humans.
Mm-hmm. It's true. So if people want to get a hold of you, or they want to go watch your shows, or keep
sure.
track of your future journeys, where would they do that?
So easily, I mean, on the History Channel page, they have all 10 episodes of Found. There it is, looking good. You know, we're trying, the Found show was a great experience, you know, and that was actually coming back to my people in the United States and being able to talk with Americans about their stuff. Why mm-hmm. do we like stuff? I got stuff in the shed and I got stuff over there, but some of the stuff is more valuable than other things, mm-hmm. right? Especially when money comes onto it. But for this show, instead of doing it like other shows that work with material culture, we were more interested in the people's story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I love, the who, what, why, where, when, how, yeah. about of that piece. You know, where'd you get it from? Why'd you buy that? Who's it from? What do you think it is?
Mm-hmm.
And these people have outrageous ideas to some people who know, because they've done the research well. And then we come in and clean up some details. So Found's one thing. The other one is just the, you know, the typical Facebook, Dale Simpson Jr. There's a Twitter page. There's a Twitter page out there. I don't use that as much. Instagram, but you know, I'm out there. Just search
and
up
Dale
Simpson.
We'll post you on our page too.
No, that would be outstanding. And thank you so much for the time and everyone behind scenes as well to get us all organized. I think I got all my notes in there. But,
thank you for being here and sharing your story.
It was awesome. Thank you for everything. And if there's anything else you'd like me to bring up, I'm more than willing to.
I'll hit you up on
That's
Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Let's go out to our shout out.
My name is Willie Kenyon, and I'm listening to the Strategic Hot Box.
Thank you to Willie Kenyon for sending us that shout out. I think that the beatbox didgeridoo is one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life. So if anybody has never checked out Willie Kenyon and his beatbox didgeridooing, then check him out for sure. Thank you again to Dale for being here with us on the Strategic Hot Box. Now it's the time. It's the time for Kick-Ass. Here's your top five. Number one is listen to understand. Dale talked a lot about it, to listen to understand you in that culture. Relativity, to make sure we're asking questions and really understand what happened in the past, what happened to the people that are parts of different cultures, what happened in your organization, what happened if you go into a new position, what happened with the leadership prior to that, anything you can do to listen to really understand. Number two is to be curious. Live in curiosity. Live in learning. Always want to absorb the next. Be curious about the future. Be curious about the past. And it'll help you have that thirst for knowledge. Number three is to respect the legacy. So it's built that foundation of knowledge, built that foundation that we are living on now. So whether it's all those things, all the human beings that you're saying, the layers of life and that came before us, and just the legacy of the foundation, the organization that came before us as well. So respect the legacy. Number four is apply that learning to the future. I think that it's impossible to make good plans for the future until we've done number one through four here, listening to understand, being curious, respecting that legacy, and then, of course, keeping your eye on the prize. Mm. And number five is enjoy the discovery. There is nothing more exciting about life than learning and discovering and just finding out all those, just uncovering something about another human being, about a person you love, a thing you love, and just living in that moment of magic of that discovery. That's exciting stuff. Enjoy it when it happens. That's your top five kick ass. Thank you again to Dale for being here. It was so fun to talk about making history relevant. Get out there and check him out on the History Channel Found or on our website. Of course, you can find all the info, Instagram, Twitter, at Brandy Love or at the Strategic Hot Box. And of course, you can head out to thestrategichotbox.com and get any info anytime. Until next time, get out there and kick some ass.